Unemployment numbers have been relatively strong in the U.S. through the Obama and Trump administrations. And earlier this month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released figures showing the number of job openings has climbed to more than 7 million. Wage growth showed some promise in this morning's jobs report, but it continues to be low and is essentially zeroed out under inflation-adjusted numbers. Why is that, and what can be done to change it? With me to talk about that is Jay Shambaugh, director of the Hamilton Project at the Brookings Institution. Jay, with job openings continuing to grow, shouldn't there be more competition in the employment market, and wouldn't that tend to lead to higher wages?
No, so you're absolutely right that the general rule people have in their head is that the tighter the labor market gets, so the fewer people kind of out of work relative to the number of job openings, that should definitely trigger, you know, an increase in wage growth, that firms are going to have to start bidding up wages. And in particular, you think this because they're going to have to start stealing workers from each other instead of just looking to someone who's unemployed. And so we're seeing the kind of the ratio of people who are unemployed relative to vacancies getting down to levels that we haven't seen for a while. And so it very much looks like the type of thing where you'd think, okay, this has really got to trigger wage growth. I think the one caveat people tend to put on that is they look not just at the unemployment rate, but they also look at just in general how many people are working out of, say, the prime age people. We often look at kind of 25 to 54 because it kind of takes out people who are in school. It takes out people who might be retiring. And it's just people kind of in the heart of your working life. And that number is the one number that still doesn't look great. That's something that has been trending down for a long time. And that's the one place where if you use that as your measure of what's the labor market like, you say, oh, actually, maybe I'm not surprised that wages aren't growing faster.
If you tend to see that your wages have stagnated based on inflation and other things, and seeing the job market as it is this a time for people to perhaps start looking for something to give themselves a chance to get a higher wage? Or are we on the cusp of an economic downturn potentially, and this is a bad time to do that?
You are starting to see the quits rate, which is something economists like to look at, start to come up a little bit. And so that is that kind of idea that you're seeing people saying, you know what, I don't need this job. I can get a better job. And you'd like to see that. I think especially quits when people are transitioning straight from job to job, there's in some sense no risk in that. You're not, you know, quitting to sit around and hope you find a job. I think in general, though, what we're seeing is it's pushing on this, going back to the question you asked, we said, you know, shouldn't there be more competition for workers? That's one of the things we worry about somewhat is that maybe what's going on, that there's more concentration in business than there used to be. And one of the ways that can show up is maybe they're, you know, the same set of firms doing the hiring in a given location, and they kind of choose not to compete with each other too much. In some cases, it's been outright illegal, where you've got hospitals who will openly agree with each other not to hire each other's nurses, and that's literally illegal. But that can happen more through kind of tacit collusion as well. And if there isn't that sense of someone's going to bid away your worker, we worry about that a lot because that's where you won't see any of that competition pushing up wage growth. And just the last thing to say on that, in some cases, firms are figuring out ways to kind of push that margin. So you may have heard there are a lot more non-compete contracts than there used to be. There's a prominent case recently where a janitor was told he wasn't allowed to quit to go to a different firm because he had a non-compete contract. And we typically think of those as things, you know, the engineer who knows the secret formula, the Coke, or the CEO, you know, those are the people who should have those. And instead, we're seeing almost 20% of low-wage workers with these things. And that's one place where suddenly you're going to see a difficulty for workers to use the tight labor market to put upward pressure on wages.
We also saw a relatively recent Supreme Court ruling related to labor unions. And I wonder, as unions have become weaker in this country, is that affecting wage growth?
Absolutely. I think, and it affects it in a few different ways. Just directly, you've got unions who, when you don't have as many private sector unions, and, you know, just to be clear, I mean, it's gone from, you know, over a quarter of private sector workers to down, you know, well under 10%, closer to 5% of private sector workers. It's not the typical experience of most private sector workers anymore to be represented by a union. And so just directly in terms of ability to bargain and things like that, it matters a lot. But I think it also comes into play on that last point about things like non-compete contracts. In a world where most work or a lot of workers are represented by unions, I just don't think you would have seen non-compete contracts become kind of the standard form that companies use because the unions just wouldn't have allowed it. But for an individual worker to be asked to kind of think through the long-run implications of signing this one non-compete contract, especially when in many cases they're being presented with those non-compete contracts on their first day on the job. So they've already quit their other job, or they've already kind of turned down other opportunities. They show up and they're told, look, if you want to work here, by the way, you have to sign this contract. I just think that's something you wouldn't have seen in a world with unions.
And Jay, finally, what are some improvements you think could occur? And is it possible for those to occur without political changes? Is the philosophy so different between, let's say, Republicans in power now as opposed to if Democrats were to win the House or Senate or whatnot? Or is it just sort of a broader corporate situation?
It's both. One aspect where I think you see a lot of political agreement is almost anyone in power generally likes to see the economy doing well. And realistically, nothing is good for workers more than a high-pressure economy. Even though we're not seeing all of it translate yet, it's certainly something we think is, on average, good for workers. So that's certainly going to be important as well. But the broader kind of shifts in how corporations are viewing things could be part of what's going on as well. I mean, one thing that it's harder for an economist to talk about because it's more of an almost sociological explanation is this idea that firms haven't really had to fight for workers for a while. You know, the recession was really deep and really long. And, you know, there are firms that sit around and they literally complain about the inability to find workers. And when pressed, they say, well, someone says, well, have you tried raising wages? And they say, no, look, I've been paying $17 an hour for this job for the last 10 years. There's no reason I can't find workers to fill it. And you sit there and you want to say to them, well, you know, wages are nominal. They should be growing over time. If you're paying the same thing today as you did 10 years ago, that's not a very good wage anymore. Look, they have to be raising wages at a reasonable rate or they're just not going to have any workers.
Jay Shambaugh is director of the Hamilton Project at the Brookings Institution and a former member of the White House Council of Economic Advisors.